Welcome to a night of total terror.
When was the last time you were scared out of your wits?
When you're alone, when it's quick, when you're wanting, squeeze her under. When you're down, when you're strained, your face has come out of the rain. When you're strained, no one remembers your name. When you're strained,
it's back, just like a shitty pop song you thought you forgot about. It's back once again. It Came From Queens is back. Thank you once again for tuning again to The Static this evening. My name is Benjamin Falbo. Sorry so long for being gone, as I was telling our guest off screen just now. It is funny the directions life can take you when changes hit and different and a new year comes, but I'm happy to be back, and I have a wonderful guest on tap for tonight. My name is Benjamin Falbo, and one thing I've dropped a few breadcrumbs about over the years I've been doing this show is my love for the weird and wild world of professional wrestling. For those who don't know, for several years before I was doing this solo podcast, I was a part of the very Z-grade internet wrestling podcast, the General Admission Wrestling Podcast, for about 4 or 5 years here in New York, where me and my chuckle nut buddies would run around the city and go to all the indie shows we could. We talk about Raw, SmackDown. These were the pre-AEW days, you see. These were the dark period where there was nothing else to watch on television. Maybe Lucha Underground, but that was about it. Not a whole lot to write home about in terms of late 2010s American televised wrestling. But that is one of the things we will talk about today with my guest. He is the brainchild behind the Walking the King Road series. He is an accomplished writer, both digitally and printed. And you might know him best for his plethora of wonderful ranking videos, end-of-year lists, video essays. You may have seen his wonderfully crafted Bryan Danielson video essay. You may have seen his, even my opinion, more well-crafted and more well-argued Chris Jericho is not the GOAT video. He's done various others that I don't even have time to list. You knew I was going to go there. Come on. I think that's what you're kind of infamously known for. But enough blowing smoke up his ass. Time to get to the nitty gritty. Ladies and gentlemen, Joseph Montecilio, everybody. How you doing, sir?
Hello. Thank you so much for that very comprehensive introduction, actually.
Since we finally set a date for this, I've really been doubling down on trying to figure out what makes the creative that is Joseph Montecilio. And you really are a multifaceted individual, sir. It is very interesting to dive into the catalog of your work. So let's start with a basic one. How you doing, bud?
I'm doing okay. Actually, last week I was sick, but luckily the voice and everything, it seems to have cleared up just in time to do this with you. So I'm really excited. Glad to be here.
Wonderful and good to hear that. So let's just dive right into it. This is an important question. I'm sure it's the one that all the people in the world want to know. What is your favorite LA Knight moment and why do you love him so much?
Oh gosh, man. Well, if you put it that way.
Let's give the people a little context. You are on record as not being the biggest fan of the Yeah Merchant.
I'm not at all.
Eli Drake. But let's dive into that. What sets him apart? Like, why is he such an easy target for you? And why doesn't he click for you?
I can't get behind, like, how clearly he wants to evoke the voice of those Attitude Era greats. You know, like, we can tell he's been in the tapes, watching his Stone Cold, watching The Rock, and I just don't think he backs it up. Do you know what I mean? This is very much an example of shooting for the stars and crashing right back into the earth, dude. He did not land on the moon. He didn't land in the stratosphere. That rocket went straight down 6 feet under.
Or it's buried, to quote Red Letter Media, it's down there with fucking dinosaur bones. I don't know. I like him personally, but I completely get it. I will say, one of my favorite recent writing exercises you did in relation to him, you challenged yourself to watch, I think, both nights of WrestleMania 40 last year, and you kind of you came away with, and weirdly enough, one of the matches I've oh no, it was SummerSlam. My apologies, it was SummerSlam, and one of the matches
I did both, yeah.
Yeah, one of the matches you were weirdly positive about, even at your own admission in the yes. write-up, was Logan Paul versus LA Knight. And I believe what you said was it's the incredibly annoying versus the incredibly bland, and in this instance, the incredibly bland wins out. If I'm getting that correct.
Something like that. I recall it being like fine, and I was shocked. I was like, I'm supposed to hate this, and I didn't hate it at all, honestly.
Maybe it's like two, you know, it's like two negatives create a positive science. I think that's what we're working with here. No, but that was surprising.
Sometimes it just works out, you know, like sometimes magic if you can call having a not awful match magic, then there you go.
So, Kath, I've been hyping that question up since we got to this, but I'm gonna. So here's a more serious question. One I really do want to get into. What began your passion for writing, and did it go hand in hand with wrestling? Were they mutually exclusive, and did they just kind of? Was there a marriage of the two along the way, or did one kind of logically lead into the other?
Writing came first. Like, if I had to really pinpoint where my love for writing came from, it's from the fact that I like mimicking the things I love. I've mentioned this, like I am a mimic at heart. And one of the first things that was like writing that I did was I used to transcribe in Word documents on my computer the voiceover recordings of episodes of The Amazing Race. Like, I loved that. I loved The Amazing Race. I loved the game. And I didn't care about anything happening in the middle. I just wanted to nail down everything Phil Kogan said. Like, to receive their next clue, teams must fly to Brazil and whatnot. And from there, it spun off into basically creating fan-invented Amazing Race voiceover scripts, where I would be like, oh, teams must now go to where I went to grade school and find a clue inside my classroom. Stuff like that. And that was really the start of it before it became anything formal, like fiction writing and essays. That came a little later on. I think I was in second grade. I'd read The Silence of the Lambs. And again, it was a form of fan writing that really got me stuck in. I was like, I want to read about the part where Hannibal's doing murders, man. Like before the show Hannibal came out, I was like, I want to see that shit. So I wrote my own little version of it, probably awful, you know what it is, but that was the start of it. After getting into it, I was like, this fun, I enjoy this, and I think I can get good at it. And my mother was very supportive of it. She was a writer herself, and just kind of snowballed from there.
Wonderful. And ducktailing off of that, now we talk about the other half of the equation, professional wrestling, that wonderful, stupid sport we all love so near and dear to our withered hearts. What began your passion for wrestling? Like, what was that match or moment in wrestling that made you realize, fuck, I love this? And even more than that, fuck, I want to write about this.
Oh, well, I've told this story that the first time I watched wrestling was for the Edge and Lita Live Sex Celebration. And for exactly the reason.
What a fucking way to start.
Yeah. Look, I was a kid. I was a young man surfing the channels, and someone said there was going to be boobs. So what was I going to do? Not watch? And I'm not going to lie. The first few weeks that I followed up with Raw, it was just to see if they would do it again. Like, 100% the truth. I know, like, kids are stupid.
Oh, we absolutely are. Dude, when I was a kid, I thought Deuce and Domino were awesome.
Yeah, exactly. So that was me. I can't recall what started me writing about it. I think it would have just been a function of me discovering forums. That came a little later in my fandom. So maybe like, I would say 3 to 4 years into fandom, I started finding message boards online, and I was like, oh, I could hop into this. And I think I only got into wanting to do reviews because I was a fan of review formats for other media. So at the time, it was the late 2000s. I was discovering YouTube. So the big names, Angry Video Game Nerd, all right? Nostalgia Critic channel. Awesome. I was stuck in. I was fully stuck in.
You've been in the trenches, motherfucker.
I was in the trenches, dude. I knew like the lore. I was watching the anniversary specials and the crossovers.
Yes! Yeah, dude, I have a DVD of Kick-Assius sitting on my shelf right now.
My God,
I am holding on to that shit till I'm 90, so I can send it to the Library of Congress to be preserved. Yeah.
It's a genuinely fascinating artifact of internet culture.
I was there, dude. I was there when the sun rose, and I was there when mountains fell.
Yep.
We were there in the trenches, man. I was following atop the fourth wall, the storylines, fucking Mechakara and all that shit, dude.
All of it, yeah.
We may have to, if we get into the weeds on Channel Awesome stuff, we'll be here for 4 hours. That might have to be.
It's so much.
If I bring you back for another episode, it may have to be for a fucking Channel Awesome discussion. But that
is. Oh my God.
That is for a later date. And that may be, because, yeah, that'll be fun to do. But
yeah.
Here's what I want to do before, because I have nothing but questions pertaining to wrestling. But before that, I want to make, before the audience more than likely tuning in for this wants to hear about that stuff. But fuck it. This is for the audience, not for you. I'm going to make you fuckers eat your vegetables before I give you dessert and give this guy a wrestling question. So I'm going to give this guy a fucking platform to talk about what I think he would really like to talk about right now. Talk to me about In the Blood and Other Stories, where that came from and where people can get that.
All right, so In the Blood and Other Stories is my debut anthology of horror short stories that have been published throughout my life. The first fiction story I had professionally published came out in 2008. I was 12 years old. I was very lucky. Very lucky and had a very supportive system around me. And yeah, I kept writing and I regularly published short fiction in like professional venues. I'm talking like anthologies, magazines, things like that. And you do it long enough, you have enough to put into one book, and you go to a publisher and you're like, please put this book out. And God bless them, they finally did it. And it came out last October 2024. Currently not available to international audiences. However, if you have friends and family in the Philippines, you can ask them to pick up a copy. You can get it on Shopee and Lazada or UP Press's official website. That's the University of the Philippines.
Wonderful. So glad to hear that. Congratulations on that milestone for
you. Thank
you. That's a great accomplishment. But actually, that perfectly segues into my next question. Talk about your life in the Philippines a little bit, and does its cultural influence go hand in hand with your love of professional wrestling, if that's a fair thing to ask?
I think when I was getting into wrestling in the 2000s, it was a pretty... I would say it had a fair grip on the Philippines. And I will describe it in this way. In the Philippines, in Metro Manila specifically, there is a form of transportation called a jeepney, right? And this stems from the Second World War. We basically repurposed a lot of the military jeeps that the U.S. Army left behind into public transportation. And one of the things that we do to the jeepneys to sort of express our culture, our creativity as a people, is they spray paint them. I don't know if spray paint's the right term, but they're painted with these lavish designs on the sides. And they're always painted with significant figures. And so it's only in the Philippines that you'll see a jeepney, this like hunk of metal painted on the side. You'll have Mother Mary, and right next to her, Batista. Like, that's how weird and also how, like, embedded wrestling was for a time here in Philippine culture. Like,
well, was it, yeah. Like, are we talking, like a shitty JPEG from Google Images? Or are we talking, like, painted decal?
Someone fully used their hands to create this art. I need you to understand, all right? This wasn't, like, someone, like, stuck it onto the Jeep. All right, someone used their physical body to create art that featured.
This is a labor of love from someone.
100%, and this is done on basically every jeepney, and some of them. I'm not shitting you. Jesus Christ, right next to it, the Undertaker. Like, I'm not kidding. That's well, not an exaggeration, well, fair, legitimately.
Two, well, let's be fair. They're kind of the same person. They both look in the bed constantly. So it's like...
I mean, if you put a hat on Jesus, yeah, Jesus, yeah,
it's about the same, I mean. Yeah, we're getting canceled on this one. Anyway.
But yeah, that's how... Because at the time, wrestling was accessible through television, both on cable TV and like... if you didn't have cable, I think there were some channels that still would air WWE TV. So like Raw and SmackDown. And they've run a few house shows here throughout the years as well. They always do a decent enough number. So yeah, there's always some interest in wrestling here in the Philippines.
Excellent, because it is interesting to look across cultural borders and see what, well, I take for granted as common 8 to 10 o'clock television on Monday, Friday, and whatever day of the week. That might not be the same, like, let's say, I don't know if this is the right way to describe it, but other countries may not have the same pop cultural infrastructure that America does.
Sure.
So it takes things a different pace to kind of trickle in to different cable affiliates and different subsidiaries of broadcasting. So it is interesting to always hear how different countries are receive and intuit that kind of stuff. Now, if we're talking
it's sort of in and out of relevance here because of the shifting deals with the broadcasters. So there's always like a bit of a struggle over who gets to actually air it. And when it shifts channel, sometimes you lose it on your cable, et cetera, yep. et cetera. So I think there was another hot period. I would say early 2010s when it became really accessible to a lot of people with cable again. So that coincided with things like Summer of Punk, The Shield coming up. So WWE was sort of hot yeah. amongst people my age again.
Honestly,
around that
you
time
came there. In during a, I'd say even for WWE, I honestly think that like, late 2012 to like 2014-ish, I think is honestly one of WWE's most consistently solid periods. You know, never attaining.
I would say so.
I don't think like top tier 10 out of 10 greatness, but of the point where if you watched like hypothetically like 3 or 4 episodes of Raw from week to week in a row, you'd walk away feeling moderately positive about it. It wasn't until 2015 onward that it started to fucking lose me again like it did.
Yeah.
Those were the dark times, my friend. Again, say what you will about AEW, and we will probably say a lot, but I think that the wrestling landscape, at least in America, is a more vibrant, interesting place because of it.
Yes. Yes, that's fair.
I think it's like, there's something else to talk about. There's another store on the street to go shop at least, you know? Like,
definitely.
I cannot go back to a strict WWE diet. It's like, listen, I like, your boy likes a fucking Big Mac, but you can't have it all the time, dude. It ain't.
No, it's cruel. It's cruel to be like, just this one.
Just this one. And now it's just like, but hey, you kind of spoke to that in another article you wrote that I was also a big fan of, and I want to get the title right. There are only two wrestling companies on yes. television. And I always thought that was interesting. It's like, yeah, it's good that there is another one, but there's still only two. And
right.
one side does something its own way where it's sort of WWE is very interesting to me because I've always viewed WWE, at least in its current form, as they are wrestling, but they don't want to be. And
yes,
which I think is,
they've been that way for a while.
Like, and it's, listen, is it comparatively better now than it was, say, 10 years ago, this time a decade ago? Like, I don't know.
Probably marginally better. Do you know what I mean? But there's something baked in to that corporation that is like deeply insecure about wrestling.
I once tweeted this out, and I'm still very proud of this tweet because I think it actually slightly blew up, and I still stand by it. To me, WWE it's like your parents got divorced, and like your dad, like, he wants to keep custody of you, but he's like a piece of shit like 80% of the time. But like 3 or 4 times a year, he'll take you to Disneyland, or he'll take you to play mini golf, or he'll do something
fishing.
Nice. Take you fishing. And
yeah.
That's Gunther versus Sheamus. That's like Roman versus Bryan Danielson. Like, I'll throw you a nugget every so often.
Yes.
And I compared AEW as a really well-intentioned and very creative kid who refuses to take his Ritalin prescription.
I think that's pretty accurate. That checks out. There's those two are fascinating entities. Like, just WWE and AEW. And people, I think what I was trying to get at with that article especially is that people view them as this binary, and they're not. Like, they are shockingly way more similar to each other than I think what we would call the tribalists would like to admit. And there's just such a wide, much wider world of wrestling beyond them that I think people could really learn to love and enjoy.
How do you feel about tribalism? Like, okay, here's the thing. What do you view tribalism as? Because that word gets thrown around like candy nowadays. Yes. And I don't think people, I feel like people only kind of sort of understand what tribalism, in your perspective, from your perspective, what does tribalism in wrestling actually mean?
I think it's the people who, like, I would characterize it as people who take it on like there's sides, right? Like they are participants in a brand war where their brand must win. And that's just odd to me. You should never be rooting for a brand. You should be rooting for the form, you know, the art itself. You know, I'm not interested in whether WWE or AEW wins, although it would be nice to see the WWE completely crash and burn. But that's institutional rot that had nothing to do with me. But I want wrestling to thrive. I want pro wrestling to be beautiful and grand and diverse. And it doesn't matter what letters you put on it.
I almost felt if you took the, I would say, more on the fly, spontaneous, like more like improv like booking of AEW and you mixed that with the structure and production of WWE, I feel like you kind of have a more of a cohesive vision. But like you talked earlier about like being hurt by wrestling, and I think that because we love wrestling, but it can hurt us. So I guess what was that first moment in wrestling for you during your fan? You are an entrenched fan. You are invested. What was that first time that either for intentional or unintentional reasons wrestling finally just broke your heart? And I don't mean just broke it, stomped on it. And you're looking at the TV like, how fucking dare you, sir? Because I know what mine is, but I want to hear yours.
God, you cannot be a CM Punk or Daniel Bryan fan without being severely heartbroken in real time so often. This wasn't even the worst, right? But I have such a vivid memory of this. It would have been 2013. Mm-hmm. And I think there was something with the title. Something had gone wrong with the title. I may be mixing things up. Anyway, I was certain that Brian was going to win Money in the Bank. And I was like, Brian's going to win Money in the Bank. He's the only one that makes sense. He got hot with the Shield feud, he's gonna win Money in the Bank, and Randy Orton won. And again, if we're looking at big picture, this all fits and it does make sense, it all does play out eventually. But at the time, I remember coming into school the next day, I was ranting and raving, I was pointing at people who were like happy about it. I was like, no, you idiots, this is ridiculous, this is the end of the world, how could they not do this, the most obvious thing, blah 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 blah. And again, not even the worst thing WWE has done to Brian at all. But okay. I just have such a strong memory of that one pissing me off.
That was the moment that radicalized.
It may have been. And there had been like punk stuff before that and just random stuff. I think one of the first ones maybe was a much more earnest version would have been starting around late 2006, WWE pay-per-views only broadcasted here in cinemas. It was very odd. Yeah, in cinemas. You had to go to the cinema.
That actually sounds pretty dope.
Yeah, it was fun. It was fun. You pay a ticket, you go in, and people were like, they would pop and like cheer. Like, and I was watching WrestleMania 23, and I don't know why I got it in my head. I was like, I really want Shawn to win the belt. And Cena won, and that sort of started my Cena wins.
I can speak to this. You're kind of pissed off, but you don't quite understand why. You're not exactly mad at the guy who won, but you're mad at someone, and you're trying to make sense of it. That happened to me, Royal Rumble 2008, Randy Orton versus Jeff Hardy, where I was sure that this was Jeff Hardy's night. He was going
Jeff Harvey
Jeff Harvey was going to win that night.
Yeah,
Because that was the feud where like he beat the shit out of Matt and Jeff did the willow and the wisp and the willow off the top of the cage onto Umaga, and he jumped off of Orton off of the entrance Tron, and there was that rooftops music video where they just made Jeff Hardy look like this like god among like autistic art kids, and I was like, oh man, this is gonna be amazing, he's gonna win, and then Randy Orton beats him with an RKO at reversing the twist of fate, and like
yes,
you could feel my like childhood innocence. Just,
yeah.
Okay. Do you remember like that? You ever seen the Powerpuff Girls? Do you remember when the clown turns into the mime and like his color washes away?
I think I have seen that clip. Yeah.
I'll when I edit this, I'll put a little bit over it for like an instant.
Yeah.
Like, oh my god, you could feel like that was this moment where I was like, then why would they make that video package for him if he wasn't going to win? It wasn't until like Armageddon, I think, like the next, like later that year, that he finally won the shit. Which, you know, in fairness, it worked well in the long term to elicit that positive reaction later. But it's that dice roll you play with professional wrestling, where it's like, in order for it to be at its best, first it needs to hurt you a little bit first.
That's true. It does hurt, and WWE especially, they like to make it hurt. They really do. They are spiteful with it. They are.
Never forget when Daniel Bryan gets eliminated. I think it's from the 2015 Royal Rumble.
Oh my god.
And, yeah, oh god, I just opened up a big wound, brother. But then
shattered dreams.
I looked at my friend. I was sitting next to him watching this, and I was like, that cannot be an accident.
They're such pricks.
They know exactly
what they know.
Doing you pieces.
They know.
Okay, like now I'm gonna turn this to something else. Let's transition into something a scooch bit more positive.
Sure, yeah.
You talked about earlier that there's a world of wrestling outside of the two major entities, and one of the things I want to credit you with severely, at least the last year and a half or so, you have been a big champion for two brands that I have gotten into a lot over the last few months. The first being Deadlock Pro Wrestling, and the
hell
other
yeah,
DMLL, two different tastes that I think go great together. So I don't want to. I think you do a tremendous job talking about the appeal of DPW in your large write up that you did a month or so ago. And if you haven't read that, it's on his blog. Go read it. It's tremendous. But in a condensed fashion here, what would you say the major selling point of DPW, especially in a heavily saturated independent market, is?
I think their greatest strength that will stand out to anybody who even gives it a shot is the extreme amount of polish on their production value. I think that's first and foremost, it looks great. It looks great as a wrestling show, but when you get deeper into it, it's just an extremely talented crop of regular talent who shows up every month, basically. It's a very forward-moving, cohesive sense of booking. Everything feels purposeful and driven. And it's very much a promotion that always feels like it's moving forward. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Some wrestling is like a series of great moments just sort of put together one in front of the other. But DPW creates this very real sense of independent wrestling. Okay, we have a vision. We're moving towards it. We may or may not get there, but either way, someone has the wheel. We're moving it towards this point. We're going to enjoy the journey together. And I think that they have such a deft hand at being able to assure fans that this is all going somewhere. The journey is going to be fun and the payoff is going to be worth it. And more often than not, I feel like they make good on the promise.
Adam Priest, LeBron Cazone.
Oh my God.
Mad Dog Connolly. I mean, I don't.
Yeah.
You. Thank you for exposing me and by proxy the larger world wrestling world at large to that gentleman. And I am very happy. He's finally. My dream match with him is finally happening. I believe over here in New York, although he just moved to Los Angeles full time. Casanova Valentine and him are going to be having a dog collar match.
Soon.
So I'm very. That's the match that I've been pining for. For a very long time, so I'm very excited for that. So, shout out to him on that one. So, hang on, just click that there. So one question I'm going to ask in this half is now. You mentioned CMLL as well, and you've ultimately said you don't feel the need to do an entire article or video dedicated to it. Although that could change, I think you've said. But as far as your main selling point for CMLL. You basically just said, just watch it. You'll walk away with something entertaining like 9 out of 10 times with them. So I would say, here's where I'm going to take this question in a different route, because I think you've said it pretty succinctly on your social media. What is a current CMLL talent that you think is a good person to latch onto as a starting point for CMLL? Like, what's a good entry point at this stage of the game in early 2025?
Oh my God. It's the easiest thing in the world. Just Mystical, man. Just go in right at the top. Just watch a Mystical match and you'll get it. Like, you'll get it. He hits the same nerve that 80s Hogan hits, man. You're just looking for a fucking superhero, dude. That's it. They'll beat him up and he comes back and he wins. Like, it's so simple. It's the simplest thing in the world. Hogan did it with fists and leg drops, and Mystico does it with flips and Tijeras, and it's gorgeous to watch. Like, just the rhythm of it. It taps into something primal in every wrestling fan. You'll get it. I promise you'll get it. Yeah.
No, 1,000%. No, honestly, I will say, I do think that objectively, unironically, exposing CMLL to a larger international audience, specifically some of its big players, I think is genuinely one of the best, smartest things AEW has been doing the last like 2 years, I think. Like, I give
definitely
them credit. Hey, I know who Hechicero is now because of him popping up on Collision. I know who a lot of these guys are now. I have a deeper appreciation for all of these guys across the board because of their appearances there. So I think that that's a genuinely good thing.
Yeah, there's enough people in AEW that sort of keep their finger on the pulse,
yes,
and are able to recognize when things get hot outside of their company. And I think that in general, that is a plus to the mainstream wrestling scene. Like, it's good that there are people who have a view for that that isn't always just going to end with like, okay, now it's ours. Do you know what I mean? Sometimes it ends that way, as is the way of the world. But the fact that it's not a certainty that it goes down that path is a step in the right direction.
Nice. So we're transitioning here. CMLL featured very heavily on your recent year ender list, and so in regards to that video, I have two questions for you. Number one, yeah, are you okay? Number two, do you need booze? are you good there, champ? Are you doing okay?
I'm just trying to figure out which part is concerning to you. Is it the amount? Is it the comments? Yeah. Which part do you think was the worst?
I struggled for a month and a half to make my, like, I did a video for my channel. I was talking about some of my favorite media. I pulled a super eye patch wolf and I did like my favorite things for 2024. Mm-hmm. And that took me a month and a half, and that had like 17 entries on it. And my video was like 20, maybe 25 minutes. Yours is an hour. And you watched 1,000+ matches.
I will say that on that front, we got to give a lot of credit to my co-editor, Sam, the VA mod.
Yes.
He handles quite a few portions of the video. And the portions that I handle myself are the big lists at the end. So it's Wrestler of the Year, Input Over Output, and Match of the Year. And those are sort of a cheat. You know what I mean? It's a picture and some text over a looping background. So you just sort of do that ad nauseum until it's done.
You gotta do the watching and compiling and like,
that's true.
Do I put this over that? But if I put this up here, I gotta move this back down there. I've done ranked lists before, dude.
Yep.
It's a pain in the dick.
No, 100%. The rewatch is the worst part.
Oh.
It's so bad. Every year I tell myself, I'll just watch a little less this time. And even then I end up like watching like, fuck, it's like 40 matches. They're all half an hour long. It's ridiculous and it's stupid. And at some point I really just have to go, I'm going to stop and just trust that I know what I'm talking about.
I can stop whenever I want to, God damn it.
It's my video.
I'm the wrestling boy. I'm the one who wins.
It's true. So at some point, you do just have to have mercy on yourself and be like, look, I did the work. I know what I'm talking about. This is what it's going to be. I feel that this is true and accurate. And I just have to trust that that's enough.
Excellent. We're gonna in a few minutes we're gonna take our first little break here, but before that, one final question in the first half here. What in regards to that best of list, and this actually goes very deep into your ongoing ratings every year, into your year-ender list, into the essays you write that can talk about a specific series of matches or a person series of matches, like your Punk 2023 video, Walking the King's Road, even other matches you've done that mainly are your Danielson McGinnis essay. When do you personally feel, and this can vary, but what do you feel is the commonality of when a good match becomes great? When does a good match become great?
Oh, wow. I get this question a lot. Usually it's phrases like, what do you look for in wrestling? So I think there are a few baseline things, like the execution physically obviously is the most obvious thing that you have in front of you, but there's a lot of factors that go into it. There has to be a certain sense of a certain elevated sense of quality to it, whether that's the wrestling itself, the physicality is a little more violent, a little more crisp, or if the emotion is just a little more heightened, there's a little more history. If you're just able to keep cranking that up just a little bit at a time and putting in the work to make sure these elevated things come together cohesively into something that feels whole and sensible and great. And I think that's where you find the greatness in pro wrestling. But other than that, there's just an intangible touch. You just know it when you see it. You feel it in your soul when it's right there presented for you.
Wonderful. And on that inspiring note, we're going to take a quick little commercial break, throw it to one of my sponsors, and we will be right back in just a few minutes with more of this.
So I assume if you're listening or watching this piece of content that you have a passing interest in pro wrestling. If you have that passing interest and want to scratch that itch a little bit and learn about the secret, dark, fucked up history of pro wrestling, and all the riots, there's a lot of riots. Listen to Historically Speaking or watch it on YouTube. Search it. It's not that hard. Do the work.
And we're back. Thank you very much for tuning in again. I am sitting here with Joseph Montecilio, and I am pestering him with all manner of questions about the weird and wacky world of professional wrestling. So now we're going to start off with another spicy one in relation to a wrestler you've had a bit of a mixed salad of opinions about, and I think it opens
an
interesting conversation. So, Joseph, I want to talk about MJF for a second.
Yeah, I figured. Yeah.
I made it no secret that, you know, as a Long Island boy originally, and a Jewish Long Island boy at that, I am sort of, you know, I am kind of forced by law to be a fan of him, and I do genuinely enjoy the man's work quite a bit. And for it seemed a very long time, you had very, I would say, not aggressively negative, but very middling opinions about the salt of the earth. But, you know, following your lists and rankings in 2024 and into this year, MJF versus Rush, MJF versus Daniel Garcia, MJF versus Roderick Strong, MJF versus Dustin Rhodes, maybe a couple sprinkled in there. It seems as though for the last few times he's worked, you seem to have walked away with more positive opinions about the guy. So I guess let's tackle this from, what do you think he was doing wrong? What do you think he's doing better? And do you think that the current trajectory Max is on, if this is the quality he brings to it each time, do you see yourself maybe consistently changing your tune on him?
Sure. I think one thing that I really want to acknowledge first is that regardless of your opinion on Max, whether you love him or you hate him, right? I don't think he was necessarily set up for success by AEW. You can always say that, well, he's always on TV, right? He's always in a big feud. But when MJF signed, him and many AEW talents that were signed from the indies, basically straight out of the indies into 2019, that's still like raw material, raw potential in MJF. And the way you hone that in any art form is practice. And that's not how AEW booked MJF. Right? He was a special attraction. You're not getting him every week on TV. He's not wrestling every week. AEW didn't have a house show circuit until very late into their recent history. So Max isn't getting his reps in the way he may have been if he had stuck on the indies and is working every month or every week even. So I think that in that way, he wasn't given the chance to really explore the kind of wrestler he wants to be or could be under the proper circumstances. That said, the things that I think he didn't do well at many points in his reign is, I think at times he loses sight of the role of the heel. And it's really hard to separate that from MJF when it is so much what it's so brightly broadcasted that this is the thing he's meant to be. Do you know what? He's the bad guy. He'll say the bad thing. And I feel like he lost sight of some of the important principles that requires of a worker from bell to bell. Do you know what I mean? Like, he has to look cheap. He has to look like the fool. And he can't be trading elbows with Takeshita, like just standing there toe-to-toe hitting elbows. It's like, nah, man, drop. You gotta drop. You gotta fall. But he's been receiving great indirect counsel from the wonderful Matt D, who is a wonderful writer and follow. Everybody should check him out on Twitter and his writing at Segunda Caída. And I don't know, man. MJF is very, he appears to be very online. And he has mentioned Matt D in my mentions even. So I know that he's read Matt D's work on this. And it's looking like, from an outsider's perspective, it's sort of struck a chord to enough of a point where, yeah, the last few MJF performances, I'm like, you're getting it. Like, that's it. That's it.
To me personally, I think MJF is at his best when he's toning down, like when he's not working on his like tight 10 for Showtime at the Apollo. I think he's better when he's playing kind of an unhinged psychopath. I think that's which he's really good at. He has like this demented goblin sneer. And like, honestly, and I think you wrote about this when you did your weekly update. And you featured MJF and Daniel Garcia, you mentioned a point of saying they even found a way for him to justify that stupid flip moonsault that flipping destroyer thing he does.
Yes.
In that match, he is specifically targeting Daniel Garcia's neck. So it would make sense for him to do that, even though I will 1,000% agree with you. I fucking hate that move. And like nine out of 10 times, it like completely breaks my suspension of disbelief of the match.
For real.
Do you think, here's my question to you, Petey Williams wakes up in a cold sweat sometimes in the middle of the night, sometimes regretting what he's done?
I wouldn't blame Petey. For what it's worth, I wouldn't blame Petey. In that particular instance, we can definitely blame Adam Cole. Like, oh my God, Adam. Oof, okay. Look, he seems like a nice guy.
I have not seen you enjoy not fuck one of that man's matches.
No. Not in the 2020s. That
how painful was late 2010s NXT for you? Did that hurt you?
You know, it was in and out, honestly. There were times, I think those were the last days of me potentially still enjoying Adam Cole, was bits and pieces of that late 2010s NXT. But man, when the pandemic hit,
oh God,
whoa, like a switch flipped in the wrong direction for that man, because it has not been great.
When they lost a crowd that you can gauge responses against, it's like, well, this looks cool, so it must be cool.
Yeah,
like
it's been tough for Adam Cole. For as harsh as I have been about MJF's work online, need to go on the record and say that I do think Adam Cole is worse. Like, I'm so sorry, Adam.
You seem like a lovely fella, but
yeah, everyone has nice things to say about him. But ooh, this is not the job for you anymore, sir. I'm sorry.
Oh, lordy. Oh, man, I feel bad. But actually, I think that ducktails pretty good into the next thing I'd like to talk about. And this might be the crux of the whole thing. So I have a challenge for you, sir. And this is, if you say
oh, God.
No, We will move on to the next segment, but I have a list of about 18 to 20 professional wrestlers here, past and present. Yep. I am going to speedball you with these names, and I want you to hit me with a 1 to 2 sentence, whether you like this wrestler or you don't, why you like them, and if you can fit it in, your favorite match from them. Are you up for the challenge?
Let's do it. Let's do it.
All right, time on the clock. Let's fucking go. This is the gauntlet, and we're running it. We're going in alphabetical order here. Let's start off with someone I'm sure you're very well familiar with. Let's start off with Antonio Inoki.
Oh, wow. I wish I knew more of him. He vacillates very broadly for me between really boring on the mat and one of the greatest wrestlers I've ever seen. My favorite match of his, if I were to recommend to anyone, would be the 8-8-88 Broadway against Tatsumi Fujinami. I think that is one of his greatest matches, and I would highly recommend that one.
Excellent. Let's change continents here. Let's move from Japan to Canada. Let's talk about Bret the Hitman Hart.
I wish we had more of him, because I feel like his peak is very limited by the people he has to work with, but that's also why people really love his reputation. He's able to get the most out of people who aren't necessarily on his level. Pretty obvious recommendations from me, any of the Austin matches. I tend to prefer the I Quit. I get the people that prefer the Survivor Series one.
Excellent. Moving on here, let's move back to Japan and stay aside for a little bit. This is a very world travel man. Let's talk about Bruiser Brody.
Ooh, I am one of the people who is not so hot on Bruiser. I think he has his peaks, especially when he's doing brawls against like the Funks and Hansen and things like that. But I have not had the chance to reevaluate his like longer championship stuff against like Flair or even Jumbo. So I have very mixed feelings about Brody.
Excellent. Okay. Now we're going way back here. Somebody my dad holds in a lot of reverence. Talk about Bruno Sammartino.
Oh, I wish I knew more about Bruno. That one I'm really lacking a lot of knowledge on. The very limited stuff I've seen, you do sort of get it. You get the sort of like everyman working hero vibe and why that really struck a chord with the New Yorkers of the, I guess, 70s? Yeah. So gotta study more Bruno for me.
All right, let's get now really getting into the trenches with the stuff that I know you like. Let's talk about one Miss Bull Nakano.
Oh my god, the coolest wrestler that has ever lived, period. Just impeccable fits, the hair, the makeup, and she hits like a fucking truck, dude. I've been watching a lot of her very recently.
Yes.
And fantastic, like at her peak, best in the world level. We're talking one of like 5 candidates for the greatest women's wrestler to ever live.
Any match recommendations?
Oh my god. Yeah, you gotta watch the cage match with Aja Kong. Like, she literally scars the woman for life. It's amazing.
Okay, now I'm gonna see if I can get this guy's name correct, because it's a little hard to pronounce, but I think you may have talked about this guy once or twice. I don't know if you know about this guy. Ryan Danielson. Do you have any opinions about him?
Fucking scrub, vanilla midget, worthless, get his ass out of here, can't talk anybody into the building, no charisma, loser. What am I gonna do, man? He's the GOAT. He's still the GOAT.
But he made a whole, I had to throw that in there for comedy, but like, watch this.
I know.
He wrote a whole fucking video about it. He wrote 3 videos about it.
I will add, however, that Danielson's AEW run complicates his legacy in really interesting ways. I don't think it tarnishes his legacy, but I do think it gives us a little more to chew on, that we see what Danielson chose to do with his ability to work without creative limitations. And maybe that will be a video down the line, but I think it's a very interesting time in his career.
When you work with somebody who's, it's kind of the double-edged sword when it comes to the booking of one Tony Khan. It seems to be, you know, the man doesn't really seem to be able to say no, which, you know, results in true greatness, but it also results in, hey, Brian, maybe don't waste one of your final full-time matches on Jack Perry.
Yeah.
Maybe let's not.
It's tough.
We think you feel bad making fun of Adam Cole. I feel bad making fun of Jack Perry because I see what he could be. But it's like, sir, It's like, oh, so what's your gimmick? Oh, my gimmick is based on this thing I'm not legally allowed to talk about. Well, then
I
you don't.
know, it's
Well, then
really
you don't
bad.
have. Well, and sir, Booby, you don't have a fucking gimmick.
I know, it's rough. I don't think Perry's a lost cause.
He is
There may
not.
yet still be something there, but it's been a tough year or so for the guy.
It absolutely has been. On a more positive note, we're keeping this list moving here. You were very positive about this gentleman in your recent video, one Darby Allin.
Oh my God, just
Yes.
insane. Insane. I don't understand how he does it. Both the bumps and also just how well he understands it. Like he gets it on a level that is mind-boggling to me. Like the comparisons to Foley feel earned, if not 100% one-to-one, but they do feel earned. Recommendations for Darby Allin. Obviously, the Sting retirement is going to be top of many people's lists, but I think if you really want a vibe of what Darby Allin could be, go back and watch the Punk return match,
Yeah.
because there's a secret sauce in there that I feel like could become something really special.
He's a much better grappler than I think a lot of people
Oh
give
yeah.
credit for. Like, obviously, the thing, obviously, he's a fireworks wrestler, he's a car crash wrestler, and that's the stuff that we come back for. But, like,
Yeah.
and like you mentioned, hey, listen, we had our talk about MJF earlier. Him versus Darby at Full Gear 2018, 2019, I think is probably one of the best matches in terms of singles they've had. That's a really fucking good one, honestly.
I recall actually quite enjoying that match. I had some friends who were down on it. I enjoyed it. But the thing with Darby, man, like what I was watching him against Commander in this year's Continental Classic, and oh, when Darby went back to the headlock, I was hooting and hollering like he hadn't even crashed yet, and I was like, "Woohoo! Oh, put that headlock on him, Darby.
Yeah,
Wrench it tight." I was, "Ah, oh, he
let's go.
amazing, amazing wrestler, yeah."
We mentioned brutality. We're moving back over to Japan here, and obviously, I think a lot more people are familiar with this woman because of the excellent dramatized television show they just made about her. Talk to me about Dump Matsumoto.
I love the spirit of Dump Matsumoto. I have some mixed feelings about the in-ring. I don't think she always marries the like cheating gimmickry with the straight up pro wrestling, but at her best, man, she made the little girls cry, and that's as great as you can get.
Damn, Dump, making little girls cry, bruh.
It's special. It really is. And I'm gonna take a little bit of a hot take here. The obvious recommendations are the Chigusa hair matches. Absolutely go watch those. But my weird little take on Dump is that I thought that a better opponent for her was actually Lioness Asuka. So go in and check out her matches with Lioness Asuka instead. You might find them a little tighter than the Chigusa matches. A lot of people say I'm wrong about that, and I can live with that. But that's my little take on it.
Let's keep it in Japan for a little bit. Let's talk about the Great Muta. Oh.
Oh, Muda. No. He is not my
Oh.
guy. He is not my
Oh.
guy. I struggle.
Interesting.
Yeah, I struggle with Muda, man. I've done 3 years in the 90s now, and Kaiji Muto is not my favorite, dude. He really stretches my patience just a little bit. It's fun when he bleeds. I do love when he bleeds, but you know, oof, working down on the mat. Oh, give me somebody else. 'Cause not my fave. I do have a recommendation though. I quite enjoyed watching him against Genichiro Tenryu from, I believe it's War 1996. So check that one out.
Nice. Let's talk about, I'm curious to see what you'll think of this one because you make reference to him quite a bit, and I'm hard pressed. Obviously, we know how we all feel about him as a person in real life, but that's the man who plays, and let's talk about his in-ring talents. Hulk Hogan.
Oh, one of the greats for a reason. Oh yeah, I have very little bad to say about Hulk Hogan's in-ring work. I didn't sit through like the worst of the 90s WCW stuff, so I just want to put that out there. But if we're talking like peak Hogan, I'm talking like 80s babyface shine, heel heat, comeback Hogan, it doesn't get more simple, obvious, and correct than Hulk Hogan just hulking up and running through them, man. Like, it's good. Like, actually good. Like, people really need to go back and sit down and watch it, because it's there's great stuff in the Hulkamania run.
Peak match, in your opinion?
That's actually a tough one. If I had to recommend one now, there was a really, really great one against the Big Boss Man sometime in the late 80s. It was in MSG, but there's this great moment where Boss Man's trying to handcuff Hulk to the top rope, and they're fighting over it, and they're fighting over it, and you don't see until they split apart that Hulk was able to reverse it, and Boss Man's the one handcuffed. And I watched that, and I was like, that is magic. That is pure magic. And I find that one from MSG. I love it.
Frankly, this is a perfect transition to the next guy we're going to talk about, again, going in alphabetical order. We're going to transition from Hulk Hogan of the 1980s to, I think, perhaps his most logical modern equivalent, Mr. John Cena.
Oh my God, one of the GOATs. Just like, I'm talking top 10 ever. The greatest ace in professional wrestling, period. Any country, any company, it's John Cena. Like, what am I going to recommend to you? You've all seen it. Watch Money in the Bank. Watch the Raw 2013 match. It's better. I said it. It's better.
Watch Umaga versus Cena at the Royal Rumble.
The last man standing, dude. The look on his face after choking out Umaga. He looks like he killed a man. It's amazing.
That match. Okay, I don't want to detract too much, but I'm so happy that match is getting its roses this side of the decade. Because,
for
like,
real.
Obviously, that wasn't a match that was, like, underrated or little known about, but you didn't hear it come up as much as it should. And I'm so happy that people, whenever, like, great GOAT tier matches come up, I'm happy that, like, that one gets brought up. Because I'm like, no, that match is the shit.
It's astonishing. It really is.
So
like,
great.
It is one of the all-time in-ring performances from anyone ever, is John Cena in that match. Like, I fucking watch that match and look me in the eye and tell me he can't wrestle. You're wrong. You're incorrect.
Incorrect. Wrong. And so actually, this is another good one. We're talking, perhaps, maybe this might be a bit hyperbolic of a statement, but at least in terms of presentation and where he was placed when he was an international wrestler in terms of his ace status, Kazuchika Okada.
I'm hot and cold on big ol' Kazu. I really do love the peak Bushiroad stuff. I do think he is great as advertised in a lot of that. I do think he has some really frustrating tendencies. He really suffers in the lower to mid tier areas of offense. I feel like he doesn't make that interesting enough. And I feel like that has carried over to his TV work, where he doesn't really have the space to kind of go crazy the way he would in Japan. So hot and cold on him, leaning cold these days.
A match you can definitively recommend as a good showcase of his talent?
Oh man. Yeah, you could pick, just throw a dart at the Omega series. My favorite was always the G1 Omega match in 2017. That is a fantastic match, yeah.
Fantastic. Now, obviously, this man has gone by a few names, but I think we'll keep it simple. Just use his government name at the moment. Kevin Owens.
I'm a fan. You know, I enjoy Big Kev. I feel like he hasn't really had the chance to be as crazy as he was. I think he's having a cushy job and doing the most with it. Doing enough with it is what I'll say. But man, early 2010s, he was a force of nature. Like, pure psychopath. Like, you were talking psychopath for MJF. No, Kevin Steen, holy shit. Yes. At the peak of his powers, scary dude.
Somebody get Jim Cornette. I think he might be mad at me.
Oh my God. Jimmy did not get him at all. And I understand, but wow, did he totally miss the boat on something there. Best match for me, people love Fight Without Honor, but the best match in that series, I would say, is the Chicago Street Fight from Bitter Friends, Stiffer Enemies 2. So check out Steen and Carino versus Generico and Cabana
for
that show.
That's really, I used to have, I wish I'd kept this because I sold it off a few years ago because I had to sell it off for some reason. I was liquidating. I had the Kevin Steen, like I think it was like his compilation video that
Oh,
follows
good,
him
yeah.
from Final Battle 2009 to Final Battle 2010. It just charts that whole year of him just going biblically crazy and like Steve
It's so
Carell
good.
whispering in his ear and is like, this is peak. This is amazing. I gotta find that. I gotta find if anybody has a rip of that. I'll talk
Short
about that.
story about Kevin Steen back in the day as well, back in the
Is.
early days of Twitter. It was my birthday one day, and I said the only thing to complete my birthday would be if at Killsteen Kill cursed at me today. And he tweeted back, "Happy birthday, fucker," or something like that. So that's a good memory of Kevin Steen, yeah.
Tremendous. Going back, turning back the clock a little bit here, but somebody who I think, weirdly enough, I think is kind of divisive, especially when you mix hardcore fans with hipsters. Again, that tribalism aspect comes into it. Kurt Angle.
Ooh, I've gotten in trouble over Kurt Angle before. I will say that at his peak, he's good. He's good. He has some great matches. I don't think he is as great as some people say. Like, I've never really understood the best technician hype for Kurt Angle when at his core, he's a crazy bombs wrestler. You know what I mean? It's the suplexes, it's the sick moonsaults and things like that. As for a favorite match, I don't think you can go wrong saying Steve Austin, SummerSlam 2001. That's probably my favorite Kurt Angle performance.
Excellent. We're keeping it a little modern here, but we're going to bridge that gap between old school Ring of Honor to current 2025. Mark Briscoe.
Oh man, man up, one half of probably the greatest tag team ever. So glad he's getting to do single stuff now. Obviously, very tragic that it has to come as a result of Jay's unfortunate
Yeah.
passing. But yeah, Mark has been given a lot of room to show what he can do, and he's showing us that what he can do is be one of the best in the world.
He really not like that dude. I was having a discussion with hit some one of my buddies a few weeks ago, and I think this might be slightly hyperbolic, but he's very dusty-ish. He's very he
He
has
gives
that
that
like
vibe, yeah.
not in this not in the in-ring. They're not one for one copies of each other, although there's a little DNA, there's a little crossbreed in there, in that sense
Yeah,
of
yeah, yeah.
this is an everyman. This is the guy you can get behind. This is what you
Definitely.
think, this is what you see is what you get with him. The man stays in shape by tending his like various chicken coops. You can't get
For
any more
real.
real than that. It's
Super endearing, super charismatic in the ring. My recommendation, watch him win the ROH World title against Eddie Kingston. I think that's probably one of his best matches ever.
or hunt down that old video of him and Jay beating the shit out of each other with
Oh
chairs
my
and cookie
God,
sheets in a
that's
parking
good
lot.
too. Yeah.
Isn't that the shit?
It fucking rules. It's so great. 2005, yeah.
Shout out my buddy, my buddy director Matt Koffler. I'm working on a movie with him, but he found that and he's like, dude, they're just wrestling in a parking lot. And I was like, I know,
It rocks.
it's the best. That'll rock your shit. I love it. I alluded to this man earlier, but he's somebody who I feel people have a lot of very positive opinions about, and some people don't really like him. And I've always held him in somewhat high reverence, but I'm curious what you think. Randall Keith Orton.
Oh my God, so good, so great, man. Randy Orton fucking rules. And I understand why people don't like him. It was tough going for some of that late 2000s stuff, the Triple H stuff, yikes, like big yikes. But if you go back, man, like you don't have to go far. The King of the Ring run last year was very great. And if you want to see what like the vision is, this is my Randy Orton recommendation. You've all seen the Cactus Jack match. Now go back and watch the cage match with Ric Flair, where
Yes.
he's the babyface and Flair's a fucking psycho, and it's awesome. And it's
Oh,
like
yeah.
10 minutes. Great match.
No, he's Randy Orton. I think he's just one of the most consistent dudes of all time,
For
and
real.
he really is. We're going back. I think this is our last major throwback to the 1980s here, but he's somebody that I have a lot of respect for. Randy Savage.
Oh man, so good. I wish that's another one where I'm like, I have to sit down and really like comb through it because every time I see Savage, he looks like one of the greatest wrestlers that's ever lived. Do you know what I mean? Like the mind he had for it just comes through every time you're watching one of his matches. So well thought out, and structured. He is, love the Macho Man. Great wrestler. My recommendation for Savage. Skip the Mania 3 IC title match, though it's very good. You look for the Toronto IC title match with Ricky Steamboat. The one where one or both of them gets bloody, it fucking rules.
Nice. And coming down to the end here, down to our last three or four here, we're going to talk about Rey Mysterio.
Oh, dude. there are almost no words. Just,
yeah,
all-timer. Fucking legend. Holy shit. Still going? What?
Something primal in your brain when I see it. I am a 27-year-old man. I pay taxes now. The world is in a weird place. But you know what? Even if it's not for a very entertaining match, whenever I see Rey Mysterio pop up on my television in 2025, it gives me a little bit of comfort. It really does.
This is how good Rey Mysterio is. All right. This is what I'm going to say. This is how good Rey Mysterio is. Rey Mysterio is so fucking great as a professional wrestler and has been for 3 decades now that he got Chris Jericho within inches of having a perfect match. I'm talking like by the skin of his teeth close to having a perfect match, and that's how good Rey Mysterio
is. That video you made where you were talking, that kind of opened my eyes, so I'm like, huh, wow, Jericho is not the fucking technician that I thought he was.
He's really not.
To be fair, are there many Chris Jericho matches that I still enjoy to this day? Absolutely.
Yes.
Even in the video, you say this is not a man without talent. You just say that it's
absolutely
overblown. I honestly feel like what happened to you is kind of what happened to High Top Films with Spider-Man. I feel like you've kind of been, I don't know if this is accurate, but I feel like you've almost been kind of blamed for like the perception of Jericho because of that video.
You know,
you said, hey, listen, you're very balanced to him. You say, hey, listen, he's good at this part of his shtick. He's good at this, but you say just
yeah,
the package doesn't come together.
Yeah, I really tried my best to be as accurate as possible without giving in to like consensus. But yeah, you post a video with a title like that, and you with the clickbaity thumbnail, not the goat or whatever it was. And people are just going to assume that I spent an hour and a half saying he's the drizzling shits. That's not what I did, for the record. But yeah, it comes in cycles. It comes in cycles,
really?
The comments.
You didn't know that thumbnail was going to do that? Really?
No, I did. But I will say it comes in cycles, because for a lot of 2022, it was like, oh, Jericho's proving you wrong, man. Look at XYZ. And then you just wait a year, and then it's like, man, this aged like fine wine.
And then, wow, Jericho is back. We're back to peak. Cut to, yep. I am the learning tree.
It really, in and out, like clockwork, those comments. It's
just
hilarious.
I'm just imagining you just sitting there with like a glass of wine or something, just being like, good. Coming down to the end here, let's wash that out with something more positive. A person I have a huge amount of reverence for, formerly El Generico, Mr. Sami Zayn.
We talked about aging like wine, and man, has Sami Zayn aged like wine. He cannot do all of the things that he used to be able to do, but it feels like he's a sharper wrestler than ever in 2025.
I they've been putting over the Blue Thunderbomb as like a big weapon in his arsenal lately. And I think that like, that speaks to what you're talking about. It's like, I feel like that's one of the few flashy things he still really does. And I think it means
right.
a lot more now that he's getting on in years.
Yes, definitely. And also, Sammy was never ignorant of selling. That was always one of his strengths, even as El Generico. But in recent years, he has really figured out the execution and timing of babyface selling and into a comeback. And if I had to pick a match to recommend, it's almost too hard. There's so much. I will say to highlight Sammy, you check out the Bola 2011 final. Mm. Where he beats Steen to win Bola. I love that match. And I think it's one of their secret best matches that people don't really talk about. So I recommend that.
It's a good one. Intense, just they've just done had so many. Hey, that's not really that's a criticism as praise, to be honest. You have so many bangers, like some are gonna get lost in the shuffle, honestly.
And a lot of them like tightly condensed in a 2-year period as well. So yeah.
Man, we're really on a good hot streak talking about all these wrestlers you like so much. So now I'm gonna fucking ruin that. Talk about Seth Rollins, you fuck.
Oh my god, dude, he sucks so much. I'm so sorry. Look, I've had my times enjoying Seth Rollins. I really have. The Shield is good. The Shield is one of the great acts that the WWE has put together this century. Like, astonishing stuff. And Seth is a key part of that. Bumping and throwing himself into shit. But wow, if you leave him alone, he's the drizzling shits, dude.
We're gonna get so much heat for this,
dude. I've said it, whatever. Here's the thing that I found about the internet: they will be mad if I say it in like a nice moderate way, so what the fuck does it matter if I just say it like outright?
Yeah.
And the thing is, I think Seth sucks right now. He can't move, he doesn't have knees anymore, and even when he could move, he couldn't figure out how to string shit together to make sense,
dude. Naito has more knees than him at this point, and that man is literally two broken legs on a body.
And Naito is still like a big box office draw in a way that Seth has never been, by the way. But I will say this, as if I was going to say something nice. I'm not. Seth also cut the worst Summer of Punk retread promo in history. So bad.
Which one?
Oh my god. The one on HDNet where Jim Cornette's asking him about his contract status, and Seth is like, I could be worth it here, I could be worth it on TV, or whatever the fuck he said. Dog shit promo. Yeah. And you can hear the crowd die in real time.
Oh,
their
it's
souls
like
shrivel.
It's nuts. If you had to recommend a Seth Rollins match you liked, what do you got?
I will recommend. Do you know what? I will recommend his WrestleMania victory over Brock Lesnar. I thought that was a very good use of his talents. Nice and compact. And they told a pretty sensible story. Like, yeah, Seth can only beat the big guy by kicking him in the nuts. It makes sense.
He did do, in my opinion, he had it back in 2014, right before Punk left, which is probably not the best version of Punk, but he had a couple TV matches with Punk that I actually thought were pretty solid, honestly. Not like,
yeah, and there's some,
anything, but like, no, there's some gems in there.
There's some great Bryan stuff in like 2013. Absolutely. During that Shield feud as well. Yeah, so yeah, go watch the Shield stuff. It's hard to go wrong with Shield matches.
I definitely recommend Shield versus Wyatt Family Elimination Chamber 2014.
So good.
I love that match. I love how I think it was either Luke Harper or Bray Wyatt who tweeted out the day of that match, one of my favorite wrestler tweets of all time, and they mentioned this on commentary: you boys picked a lovely hill to die on.
Oh, that is a good line.
That's a great fucking line, man. I like that
works good.
Down to the final two here, and honestly they kind of go hand in hand with each other, but I'll go in order. Probably the person who Seth Rollins has done a poor job of ripping off for his entire career. Come at me, internet. Mr. Shawn Michaels.
Ooh, I describe myself as a Shawn agnostic.
Ooh,
which is to say,
interesting.
I have enjoyed his work.
Yes.
And still enjoy some of the work of his that I see. But I understand why he is reviled by a large subsection of the internet. I will say that his reputation is probably overblown by the WWE machine, but to say that he was like always a shitter is also like inaccurate. That's just not true. There's good and great stuff in there. And one hill I will die on is that I still think the Ric Flair match, the first retirement match, is pretty fucking great. And I stand by I'm Sorry I Love You. Like, I think people might expect me to hate that shit. I think it really works in the
moment. It's one of the only times that something like that, I think, has happened in wrestling. There might be other more obscure examples, but I think it's one of the only times that they make a point of like focusing in on the last words a wrestler says before. It's a very anime moment in a sense, but like, it's very theatrical. But I feel like any imitation of that moment has been middling.
Yes.
And bad. The genesis of that, it's like, hey, listen, in wrestling especially, you can do something so well that it ruins everything for everybody.
Oh, definitely. And that has happened so much. so much, even so among much. The wrestlers I love. Yeah,
that's an off the air discussion, because I think we're gonna have to cut for part three of this in just a second. But we're down to the final wrestler on this list, and this is somebody who, you want to talk about hot and cold opinions, this is one I might jump in on. He's praised as great, he's seen as the devil, he's seen as a god among wrestling bookers, he's seen as the drizzling shits. Some people love his matches, some people don't. Triple H.
Oh, fuck that guy, dude. I have no fucking time for Triple H. Okay, 2000 was good. Yes, Triple H, you had a good year. People have good years, but please fuck off forever. Like, I have no time for you. I don't. Dog shit heavyweight title reign ruined every fucking hot baby face that you ever touched. Needed the greatest of all time to drag you to your best WrestleMania match ever. Please leave me alone. That's what I have to say about Triple H.
Man, not a fan.
Listen, hang on. I can read your mind. I'm going to see. Match recommendation. Him versus Foley at Rumble 2000?
No, actually. Oh. That one has not quite held up. It's still great. It is still great. But it's not quite held up the way I had assumed it might. If I was to go for a Triple H recommendation, let's go a little obscure and say, not too obscure, but I will say The Shield versus Evolution. Elimination Rules, I think, is a great use of basically everyone involved in that match. So check that one out.
That's good. And actually, you know what? I'm going to say, if we're going slightly obscure, this is a one-off anomaly. And to be fair, this was done as a joke for him to get an easy W, but it actually turned out to be a pretty solid match. Him versus Takumi Chinoku on like a Raw.
Match. It's good.
And again, I think Triple H works very well as a large base for smaller, more agile opponents. And I think that worked really good. It kind of reminded me of when they did a similar thing like a decade later, when they had like fucking Funaki face Edge on a random SmackDown, and it was like bizarrely good. That was a good one. So you have cleared the gauntlet, my friend. Congratulations. And now we're going to take another final quick little break while I get some things together. We're going to come back with a few final questions and closing thoughts. We'll be right back.
An object of terror, a vision of horror. Six will battle for the World Heavyweight Championship. Triple H, Booker T, Rob Van Dam, Dane Jericho, and the return of Shawn Michaels. The Elimination Chamber is here. The nightmare is about to begin.
Raw and SmackDown present WWE Survivor Series, brought to you by Xbox, live this Sunday on pay-per-view.
And we're back for the finale of our discussion with Joseph Montesillo. Thank you, Cecilio. Thank you so much, sir, for putting up with my nonsense for the show. And the two or three times that I have butchered your last name, I sincerely apologize.
You're doing a better job than most, honestly. So we're having a good time out here.
Your mention, I appreciate it, sir. Coming down to the end here, we just ran a whole gauntlet of various different opinions on wrestling, which I think speaks to the depths of how in the trenches you are with this and why you feel so passionately about it. You have this many varying opinions, hot take, hot or cold take or otherwise. You talk about the ultra violence in wrestling quite a lot, and I am a fellow blood merchant, so to speak. It's the kind of wrestling that speaks to my soul. And I guess, what do you feel is the true benchmark for greatness in when it comes to ultra violence in wrestling? Like, where do you think the best comes? Where do you think the best has come from? Where do you think the best is currently in 2025? And what do you think ultra violence adds to wrestling?
If we're talking specifically deathmatch, right, I think then the best deathmatch stuff feels grand. Like, it's in the name. It really does have to feel life or death. So it's not just that you're using the light tubes and the barbed wire and all that, right? There has to be a real genuine sense of danger running through the whole thing. And if not danger, then like, super elevated stakes. Like, people point to FMW as one of the original sources of deathmatch, but if you look at it, the stuff they were doing was really simple in a lot of ways, right? A couple really big bumps with a couple big booms to go with it, but because of how Onita filmed, presented, and wrestled those matches, it always felt like the biggest thing on earth.
Well, it felt like a snuff film. That's what.
Yeah, basically, and or like the finale of a really great like 90s action movie, for example, yes. is how a lot of that FMW stuff comes off. The later stuff, if we're talking like BJW, the stuff that came up in CZW and sort of spun off into how GCW is today, I think the best of that stuff substitutes like the grandeur of Onita's presentation with like just real sick physical danger. Do you know what I mean? Like Tremont and Gage bumping on concrete, gross.
Yeah.
Disgusting. So those are the only ways you can really go at it. At its best, you combine both. Is this real sense of, wow, that's not good to do to your body. And also, these are supernatural beings locked in combat. So that's the combination there, the sweet spot.
What do you think your favorite like violent match of all time is? Your favorite death match, favorite ultra violent match of all? It doesn't even need to be a death match. It can be maybe just a normal match that just turns violent partway through. What do you think is the benchmark for that?
Necro Butcher versus Samoa Joe 2005.
Yes!
Easy question. That man lands on his head. I don't know how he is still breathing. The way the blood flies. Oh, the mist. Disgusting. It's astonishing. It's maybe the greatest match ever.
It is the Texas Chainsaw Massacre of wrestling matches, I think, is the best.
It looks disgusting. Best enjoyed in glorious 240p. Just great.
That adds a lot more to the experience than some people might think. Oh my god. And we're talking about different tastes in wrestling, but here's the thing. I know you. You're not. I one thing I noticed in your John Moxley sick guy video essay that you did is you had a lot of reverence for a very specific match he had with Brandon Cutler, where the two of them have to do shots with each other.
Neil Diamond Cutter.
Oh, Neil Diamond Cutter. My apologies. Yeah.
It's really funny. It's a really good comedy match where Mox gets wasted. And Neil Diamond Cutter is like doing the flare shots over the shoulder. It's just a good bit. I like it a lot. and it's also the match where Mox comes out and sings Sweet Caroline. It's hilarious.
It's amazing. But I mention that specifically because it's what is a match that some people may look at as weird, ridiculous, maybe not that good. But you, for as you are a person who seems to prioritize storytelling, emotions, balanced work rate, like personality. But what is a match that you feel somebody can make a case for it being the drizzling shits, but you're like, I kind of like it. What's your hot take?
Oh, this one's fun. I'm going to say Goshi Ozaki versus Kazuyuki Fujita from 2020. Have you heard of this match?
I am unfamiliar. Regale me.
Oh my gosh. Okay. So I will preface this by saying that anyone who hasn't seen it, just switch it on. Just switch it on and just sit through it. I will have to spoil you, Ben, so I'm sorry. So I will have to ruin the experience for you just a little. I will say that I knew about this going in and it didn't ruin it for me. But this is what happens, okay? This was 2020 in the middle of the pandemic, all right?
Yeah, okay, off to a good
start.
The
match is wrestled in an empty Hurricane Hall. No fans. Zero. Goshi Ozaki, GHC heavyweight champion for NOAH, standing across from the ring. His challenger, Kazuyuki Fujita, big ol' Ironhead himself. And 60-minute time limit. The first 30 to 40 minutes of this match are them standing across each other, the ring, just staring daggers into each other, unbroken for 40 minutes. And I love it. It's so good. No, I'm not exaggerating. There's no moves. They don't even touch for 40 minutes.
It sounds like an art piece.
It sort of feels like one. I doubt that's what they were going for. But it sort of ends up being that way. You're just sort of, my experience of it is that I was drawn into it. I was like, okay, when are they going to move? And like every micro adjustment, it's like, like at one point.
Oh my God, he blinked.
Yes. No, genuinely, because at one point Go steps to the center of the ring and I'm like, oh my God. Like, it's this monumental shift. And then they do start fighting, and that rocks too. They like brawl all around the empty Kirken Hall. Ironhead like takes a swig of hand sanitizer just so he can spit it at Go's face. It rocks. It's the 2020 match of the year. It is the most COVID match of all time, and I have a deep and unreasonable love for it.
Is an amazing, that great fucking answer. Okay, that is a great fucking answer. I gotta watch this, and all you fuckers listening and watching has gotta watch this too.
And you gotta understand that there are people who are like, this is boring and dumb and I hate it. And
that's the point.
Yeah, man. Yeah, for sure. For real. You're correct. You're totally correct. You're also entirely wrong, because it's the greatest thing.
Oh no, this sounds like amazing. Like, with a few, if you watch this with a few cocktails, that sounds amazing.
You have to see it. It's amazing.
Oh, that's astounding. Wow. Oh my God. I may include, if I can find a link to this, I might include that in the video description. That's amazing. Oh my God. We met. Well, so that's a good segue into this other question too, because I only got a couple left, but what do you feel this term, again, we were talking about the term tribalism being thrown around a lot these days. But I feel like the term hot takes, especially within wrestling, it's thrown around a lot. People say things that aren't really controversial opinions. They're just like, hey, I don't think Shawn Michaels is that good. Or, hey, right. I don't think NXT Black and Gold was that good. Like, you know, people, those are just opinions. Those aren't really a hot take. What do you feel is your legitimate wrestling hot take? It could be for past or the present. Something that if you said in a room full of wrestling fans, they would be like,
Ooh, I guess it depends on the room. You know, I already get those looks when, if I just don't even mention Will Ospreay, do you know what I mean? Like, silence on Will Ospreay. People are like, huh? Why are you not talking about Will Ospreay? Yeah, yeah. What is this agenda you have about not talking about Will Ospreay?
You so I guess said that's in sort articles, of like, you understand his appeal. You said it multiple times.
People, that one's just never going away. Like, it really will not go away. And that's just how it is. I've learned to live with it. If I really had to think of one, that's a bit of a struggle. I feel like for me, I've just been exposed to so much opinions about wrestling that I can't even gauge which of mine are particularly hot or cold. I think the hottest one really that I mentioned today was that Lioness Asuka was a better Dump Matsumoto opponent. I feel like that's the one where people will be like, the fuck are you talking about? Like, even the people who are like my friends and typically are in my circle will be like, I don't know about that one. If I really had to think about, I'm struggling on that one, but that's a good question. That's sort of my default though.
That's a fair one. And we might come back to, hey, if we ever run a sequel, that'll be the one we come back to.
Sure. Yeah.
One other thing, I feel as though when it comes to the work you've produced on YouTube, we've talked about a lot of your video essay work, but of course I think your golden goose, the thing that you're largely going to be primarily known and remembered for, specifically because the wonderful Eddie Kingston shouted you out for it, which is a goat tier accomplishment, is the King of the Road series. And my goal here is just kind of ask, with all of it being, you know, mostly in the rear view now, though it's a topic you've come back to time and time again, what do you look back on from beginning to end? Do you look back on the full series fondly? Do you have any regrets as far as the series goes? Like, if you look back, hindsight being what it is, maybe I should have rated that lower. Maybe I should have rated that higher. Maybe my opinion about this wasn't as informed as it could have been. What do you feel is your biggest regret when it comes to that series? And what's something maybe you change your feelings on it now in 2025?
I think my feeling on it is that I don't really look at it with regret, although I do agree that there are things I go back and I'm like, well, maybe not that high. Do you know what I mean? Or maybe I could have talked about some of like the historical context a little bit more here and there. But I think I don't look at it with any real regret, because what it ends up becoming is a sort of ongoing record of my tastes changing while observing a single scene of pro wrestling, which is an extremely fascinating thing, because I mentioned this in the 6995 video. I go into this series and my goal is to be like, 6995 is the greatest match of all time. And I finally get to the video and I'm like, it's probably not. Which I think is really cool to see unfold throughout the series. I feel like I've been doing it for so long and it's not over. There will be more. So fear not, intrepid listeners. We will get to it. But yeah, I think that's what makes it fascinating now in hindsight, is being like, okay, Joseph started this series here and thinking these things, and how has time sort of shaped how he approaches the series now. And I'm not trying to say that I'm like the main character of the series or anything. It's just, I think it's a fun feature of how it has turned out and been shaped. And I think that's a fun feature of basically all the work I put out, is that it is a record of a moment in time that I thought a certain thing about a certain topic in wrestling. And half the fun is going back and reevaluating and see where I am in the present.
You are, I will say, you say you're not the main character of it, which I think is a very, I would say, a very honorable thing to say. But I'll, you know, the title is Walking the King's Road. We are, in a sense, walking this path with you as we digest these videos. So it's a very accurate title. And I, and honestly, if you guys haven't watched it yet, fucking, if you got an afternoon, fucking throw it on. It's a great fucking watch. It's like, I've learned so much about Japanese wrestling through this man's series. So please go watch it. It's tremendous. And okay, last but not least, my final big question, we're kind of looking, we talked about the past, let's look towards the future. You're a big, one of the big things you've talked about in many of your essays, Danielson, Moxley, you talk about this quite a lot on your Twitter, and you mentioned progression of people, picking up new things, learning them, honing their craft. Who is a wrestler right now in 2025? It could be from any company that you are keenly attuned to what they're doing. You don't, they're not at their peak yet, but you see a very bright future for them and you're more excited for what they could be versus what they are currently. Who is a wrestler that fits that very specific description?
Ooh, that's a really interesting question, actually. I think, I've got a couple answers. Sure. I want to say that we haven't seen Mad Dog's final form yet. I think Mad Dog Connolly has a lot that he can do to still like really get in the trenches and be like otherworldly good. And he is great, but I don't think he's even scratched the peak of what he could be with the help of like some institutional support from some key promotions and the right opponents. We're getting there, but just a little bit more, just a little bit more from Mad Dog, and it could be truly like insane. And this next one, I hesitated to answer the second one just because I'm such a huge fucking fan already, but I feel like, man, just the upward trajectory we've been seeing this decade. Adam Priest has the potential to be the best wrestler in the world, period. Just like, full stop. As in, wow, what a fucking talent. Like, like I get excited just talking about Adam Priest's work, man. Just impeccable understanding of traditional old school American pro wrestling, and somehow making that work on the 2025 indies. I don't know how he does it. It's almost like magic seeing it work. And the fact that he can still get better is somewhat horrifying.
Roll Tide.
Roll fucking Tide, dude. 24 to 17. Like, I'm telling you. Wow, I have sung Mad Dog's praises very loud and very often across all my platforms, but no, he really is that good. And if it's hard to wish him to be on TV, because it's scary to entrust that talent in a billionaire's hands, regardless of which billionaire it is. Ooh, but if anyone ever got behind that dude, wow. I'll throw in another bonus in here. Just because I feel like this wrestler's progression has been interesting and stop-start, sometimes not because of his fault. It's not always his fault. But Daniel Garcia has a lot of room left to grow. And that's another guy who, if with just the right work and the right support, that's another one where we could be talking about him for decades and decades to come. So I hope Daniel Garcia gets what he needs to really grow into the... I know that he has the grandest ambitions possible in pro wrestling. That is a dude who has said, I will embody Danielson's spirit. And that is the highest bar you could reach for. And I think he could do it. It's just a matter of will he.
All right. Well, sir, that brings us down to the end of this. Thank you so much for joining me today, sir. This was a fucking hoot and a half. Thank you for tolerating my ADHD little ass.
Not at all.
All these questions. This was a blast. Hope to have you back and do this again at some point, because wrestling is an ever-changing, gloriously horrifying beast, and we love it and hate it in equal measure. What do you got coming down the pipeline this year? Because the year-end video is in the pipeline. Obviously, a break might be needed, but what is, yeah, in terms of anything out of the box we can look forward to this year? Any one-off video essays, anything that might be percolating, anything you can tease or confirm for us right now?
Sure. I'm currently in the process of piecing together my own personal case for Aja Kong and her place among the greats. And I've yet to decide what form the final output will take. I'm leaning towards doing a big video in the style of the Danielson and Moxley ones. So I'm really looking forward to that, really nailing down the nitty-gritty details of Aja Kong's legacy. I would like to do more stuff surrounding Lucha, and I've already sort of brainstormed a potential project based on CMLL. That is a thing I have not talked about enough in detail. Like, I do go into it in my best of year lists, but the company's history as a whole, I feel like there's a lot more room to be discussed, especially in English-speaking YouTube circles. So those are two that I have sort of in my sights and that I'll likely be taking further steps on in the months and weeks to come.
Excellent. And before we fully cut to fade to black on this one, where can people find you? Where do you recommend they find your most up-to-date work?
JosephMonticello.com has all of my writings on wrestling. I most recently put up a little essay about Hirooki Goto's title win.
Love that.
Thank you. It was a very personal one. And it's one of those ones where you feel it in the moment. You're like, this must be set to paper. So I wrote that in a bit of a blaze. You can find my random thoughts and hot takes over on Twitter at Joseph Weirdness. I stream on Twitch, twitch.tv/Joseph Weirdness. There's the YouTube channel, Joseph Monticello. Yeah, and if I do some comedy, I sort of hesitate to plug this, but I do stand up. So you can find me on Instagram and TikTok at Joseph M. Monticello. It's a lot of crowd work and local stuff. So I don't know how you guys will take to that, but there you go. I'll put that out there in the world.
Wonderful stuff. And guys, thank you so much for tuning into this episode of It Came From Queens. Once again, if you want to follow me, follow my individual Twitter. That's @Falbo_Benjamin on the Twitter machine. I'm not calling it the other fucking name. Go fuck yourself, Elon. Find me. Once again, the podcast itself is available on anywhere podcasts are found. You can find them most easily on Spotify and iTunes. You can find it over there. There'll be a video version of this put up shortly thereafter. And we'll put a little, and of course, there'll be highlight clips for this as well. Don't know when the next episode will be or what form it'll take, though I have a few ideas. Thank you guys for being patient, and thank you again for tuning in. Once again, stay safe, stay healthy, be good to each other. This has been Ben Falbo, signing off.
When was the last time you were scared out of your wits?
When you're alone, when you're down, when you're strained, the faces come out of the rain. When you're strained, no one remembers your name. When you're strained, when you're strained.